Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us back once again Paul David Collins. Paul, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Now, would you like to tell our listeners about Elohim City and the bombing of the World Trade Center, and give that story, the complete story has never been told to the American people because of the cover-up by the media here in the United States?
Certainly. Timothy McVeigh and roughly a half a dozen other conspirators planned the Oklahoma City bombing during their stay at Elohim City. And that was a racist commune ran by, as you had already mentioned, the late Reverend Robert Millar. If I'm correct, I believe he's deceased now. He passed away. But Millar had been a FBI informant for several years. And the really interesting thing about this so-called Reverend, and I point this out in the book, is that one of his so-called projects involved the subordination of white supremacist objectives to a much more, almost I'd say, anarchistic agenda. The plan involved the unification of white supremacist groups with black militant organizations and militant Hispanics and militant Indian Americans. And Carol Howe is the one who reported this. She was working for the ATF and was inside and had infiltrated Elohim City. But this racially unified terrorist movement would overthrow the United States government. Now, such anarchistic-like movements are instrumental in the installation of totalitarian regimes. For instance, communist conspirators used anarchists to orchestrate a wave of terrorism that they would later exploit. And I believe Homage to Catalonia, George Orwell revealed that once the anarchists had served their purpose, the Reds turned on them. And in 1918, Lenin had basically commented to the fact that the majority of anarchists don't know anything about the future. They write about the future, they talk about the future, but they talk about it without understanding the present, and that's what differentiated them from the communists. And the same held true for Miller's multiracial anarchist-like alliance of terrorism, because had Miller's vision been realized, such a united anti-government movement would have been formed, and they would have provided the government with a pretext to respond with authoritarian measures. And once they would have served this purpose, they would have been cleaned out like the Trotskyist and the anarchist during the Russian Revolution.
But the thing was that Reverend Millar was actually an FBI informant. He was working for the government, so on one hand he is agitating to overthrow the government, on the other hand he's an FBI informant. What's wrong with this picture?
And furthermore, when the ATF was about to conduct a raid based on the information that Carol Howe had brought forward, and they were going to raid Elohim City, they were told to back off because of FBI assets that were in Elohim City.
And of course we know that Strassmeyer was there, and he was a German intelligence agent, probably working for the CIA or the FBI. Carol Howe was there, her boyfriend was there, Reverend Millar was there. There was a couple of other people who were probably government agents. In fact, it's like they used to say at old Communist Party meetings, if anybody sneezes, why, a whole flock of FBI agents say, God bless you. They had actually totally infiltrated the American Communist Party, and the average communist had no idea. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And our guest this afternoon is Paul David Collins. His book is The Hidden Face of Terrorism. Paul, how did you happen to get involved in the study of history and the various secret organizations that are working behind the scenes?
Well, my studying began basically when I was a lot younger. Back when I was 18, I'd pretty much place it around there that I had gotten quasi-serious about the whole thing. But I really didn't start to put the pictures together until much, much, much later on. And with the book began as a thesis for a criminology class. I was going to write over state-sponsored terrorism. And when I started to look into the topic and do some serious research, I found that I could go a lot further than just one report. And but I didn't want to go any further until I was sure that it would have a favorable response to it. And so I pretty much used my teacher's response as the standard, which now I probably wouldn't in retrospect have done that, because orthodox academia has a tendency to turn a blind eye to a lot of the facts. She didn't like a lot of what was said. A lot of it was too discomforting, but she had to admit that it was hard. She was hard pressed to argue with my contention. And when it came back with a favorable, that kind of response, I guess you could consider it favorable, I decided to go ahead and to expand upon it and to draw it out into a book.
All right, fine. Well, it's a fascinating book. It's got all sorts of interesting parts to it. And for our listeners who are just joining us, we've spent an hour with Paul talking about this, and we probably only do about page 30 or 40. And we've talked about the real cause of the Reichstag fire. And Paul, of course, goes into William Shirer's book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and points out and actually quotes from the pages where the people had testified that Goebbels, the Minister of Intelligence, had bragged about how he had set the fire and laughed about how he had set the fire that, of course, precipitated the Nazi takeover. We'll be right back here in a moment. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Paul Collins. We're talking about his book, The Hidden Face of Terrorism, and we were going to go into what happened at Elohim City. Now, everybody knows that the 168 people died there when this terrible, terrible explosion took place. But, of course, have we really gotten the complete story? Timothy McVeigh had actually written to his sister and told her that he was part of a secret special forces team that was involved with illegal activity, and there's a great deal to suggest that was true, because supposedly he was AOL from the government and yet working at federal installations that had to do with intelligence and mind control techniques, and that many people who knew him felt that he was under mind control. Certainly Terry Nichols was traveling over to the Philippines, meeting with Osama bin Laden's terrorists over there, and that has been totally suppressed from the American people. But they're the ones who taught Terry Nichols how to actually build a bomb, and he was meeting with a man named Ramzi Yousef and this Sheikh Khalid Muhammad, who now we're told was the man who was in charge of the 9/11 bombing, the mastermind of that. He's been captured by the American government, but they're not going to let this come out. They can't let the American people know of the relationship, first of all, between Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh and the special forces, and then their relationship to Elohim City, where, of course, almost everybody there was an FBI informant. And the last thing they want the American people to know is the fact there were many other people involved in this bombing. And what about the possibility that there were actually bombs inside the building? Did you look into that, Paul?
Yes. The funny thing about that whole aspect is that we're expected to believe that that an ammonium nitrate blast traveling through air, losing its intensity as it travels, is going to hit steel-reinforced concrete beams and bring it down, which it wouldn't have. And it just turns architecture on its head, because beams that supposedly should have fallen down had not fallen down, and beams that should have remained standing had fallen down, which suggested the placement of demolition charges within the building.
And I think the most interesting thing, if you've ever seen the pictures that that Charles Key put together, many of those beams that were supposedly blown down, they had sheetrock on them. It didn't even blow the sheetrock off of them. All you need to do is look at those pictures. They were cut with cutting charges, no question at all, which is why the government would not allow the defense to go in and inspect they would not allow them to touch anything or to take any specimens, and they immediately tore down the building and buried it. Because could you imagine what would happen if the American people suspected that there was government complicity in killing all those people? And then, of course, the legislation they tried to get through after the Oklahoma City bombing, Congress wouldn't pass it because it was doing away with so many of the protections we have in the Constitution. So they put those into the Patriot Act, and they got them through 46 days after the 9/11 bombing. Isn't that interesting? Go ahead.
Yes, well, what I found very, very interesting about the whole OKC bombing case was this character named Dennis Mahan, which was a former Grand Dragon. He was high up in the KKK, and he had graduated to, I believe, the Silver Shirts. He's a well-placed, very high-profile racist character in the whole white supremacist movement. He told Ambrose Evans Pritchard that he had suspected that Andreas Strauss-Meyer had connections to the government, and Andreas Strauss-Meyer had supposedly told Mahan that he had been involved with GSG-9, which is German counterterrorism, and that he had worked on the Bader-Meinhof case back in the 80s. And Bader-Meinhof, it's been known that the Central Intelligence Agency, there's good evidence that they were using them as a conduit to commit certain terrorist acts. And Carol Howe got involved with Andreas Strauss-Meyer, and she basically put on like she was his girlfriend, and was able to get into Elohim City. And she was working for the ATF at the time, and what happened was basically her investigation shifted away from Mahan and onto Strauss-Meyer and onto Elohim City, and she reported to her case officer that one of the targets for a bombing that they were planning was the Murrah Building there in Oklahoma City.
And that's why the government wanted to send her away to prison, because they didn't want that information to come out at Timothy McVeigh's trial. And so they were willing to send her to prison for 30 years and destroy her life, a woman who had actually infiltrated this terrorist movement, the terrorist camp at Elohim City, because she thought she was protecting her country, without realizing the country and the leaders of it were willing to destroy her life to keep the American people from learning the truth, and that is that they had advanced knowledge that the Murrah Building was a target and did absolutely nothing. And there were several places that they'd got that information. We have videos, interviews with other people who told them about the coming bombing, the Murrah Building, and the government said, oh, we had no idea this was going to happen. How could that terrible Timothy McVeigh have done that? And yet, was he really a covert government operative? That's what he told his sister long before the bombing.
Yes, well, the FBI basically got involved and got the ATF to back off of a raid that they were about ready to do on Elohim City, because there were supposedly so many assets there and informants. Another organization that was involved in the OKC bombing was the Aryan Republican Army, and its leader, Peter Langan, was the son of a U.S. Marine intelligence officer, and he was arrested for robbery in 1992, And then the U.S. Secret Service intervened on his behalf and negotiated his release on a signature bomb. And there are several oddities surrounding numerous heists that the ARA had pulled off, causing many researchers to believe that it was that the ARA was nothing more than a government black op from the very beginning.
Well, there's so many strange things that go on there, and certainly there were other people involved in the bombing. There was, of course, John Doe, too, who was identified by a number of people who was in the truck with Timothy McVeigh, and yet the government actually had him under arrest, and then they let him go, and they've repeatedly denied that he existed when the young lady down there, a reporter for Channel 4, tried to get that information out. Why, of course, somebody turned around and sued her. Everything has been done to destroy anyone who's looked into Oklahoma City. There was a fellow named Hoffman who investigated that, as I remember, and he got into some terrible, terrible problems and was indicted for trying to influence the grand jury or something of the sort. I think he sent them all copies of his book on what had happened. But I know a friend of mine had actually... I won't get into some of the other things, but there was so much to this story that the government had to suppress. In fact, if you read Stephen Jones' book, Others Unknown, he will tell you how discouraged he was after trial when he suddenly realized you could not get United States. He had spent something $14 or $15 million on research, and the judge gave him the money but wouldn't allow him to bring any of the information out at the trial. And of course, what he did bring out at the trial, why the government, pardon me, the press, refused to report.
Yes, well... I know also that the East Coast ambassador of the Aryan Nation and an assistant to the ARA's leader, Peter Langan, was Mark Thomas, and he was also an FBI informant. And the ARA leaders held three meetings at Elohim City to plan bank robberies and other projects in terror, and John Doe, too, was believed to be among their ranks at that time.
And, of course, David Shepard had tried to get a lot of this information out, and there was no way that the people in Washington, D.C. would begin to look into this. They wanted it to die away, and the last thing they want is for the American people to suggest that maybe this was a government cover-up, and the government knew much more about this than we've ever been told.
It's true. It begs the question, is white supremacist terrorism a social phenomenon, or is it consciously promulgated... Is it a consciously promulgated constituent in a government-imposed socio-political project?
Well, we know that they financed, the FBI financed much of the militia movement here in the United States, had it thoroughly infiltrated. They're always creating these controlled opposition. Until people understand that, they really can't understand much of what's going on in the world today. Well, now, where does David Shepard fit into this?
Well, David Shepard basically was trying to intervene on the part of several people in the intelligence community that were trying to bring the fact that Al-Qaeda was planning an attack on the WTC buildings. They were trying to expose this, but they were meeting resistance from those inside the Justice Department.
Now, these were intelligence agents or FBI agents who were trying to get the information out beforehand, and they couldn't get it out, so they asked David Shepard to do it, and I've talked to David Shepard. He wrote a great book called Sell Out. I think he's an honest man. And there was no way that the government, he couldn't even get it to meet any of the people he personally knew, because they didn't want to be told that the attack was coming. That is the most frightening thing.
That would be correct.
All right. Is there anything else you want to say about Dr. David Shepard before we go to our break?
Well, basically, he was trying to warn the people get the information to Attorney General Ashcroft, but he was blocked by low-level Justice Department individuals.
And it really sounded like Justice Ashcroft or Attorney General Ashcroft didn't want to get the information. My good friend Dr. Garth Nicholson was also told by intelligence agencies the attack was coming on September 11th. He was only told about the Pentagon. He passed the information on, but all shucks, he was never called before the committees for that were investigating this. We'll be back in just a moment with Paul. Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WART.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, Allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure Allicin garlic extract reduced the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure Allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamax. Alamax provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamax? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamax at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind everybody here in the Monterey Bay about the meeting we're going to have, the special all-day-long seminar out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and it's going to be on the 29th of November, 2 days after Thanksgiving. It was the only time we could get this time of year. There was nobody booked for weddings or something else, and we'll be having speakers coming in from other areas. It should be a great, great program, and we'll have Joan Paris talking about the USA Patriot Act, and she'll tell you a lot of things you don't know about this legislation. We'll have Dr. Klink coming and talking about what's happening in the churches across America. And we're going to have, of course, Brad Dacus here, and he's going to be talking about Christian persecution, and Bill Sardi's going to be talking about health issues, and I'm going to be talking about the real reason for the war in Iraq. And we'll also be talking about what's happening as far as the courts and the Ten Commandments, and why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. So it should be a great time. We hope that you'll want to come, and we're hoping to get a good turnout. Now, we're going to have to serve lunch there. We're going to be serving lunch, so we need to know how many people are coming. And if you'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Make a reservation. If you don't know how to get there, we'll send you a map. If you're from another area and you'd like to come, we'll get you a list of the various hotels or motels that are inexpensive where you can stay. And the program's going to start at exactly 8:30 in the morning. Nobody wanted to be the first speaker, so my staff selected me to be the first speaker. So we want to have you there in plenty of time, and then we'll go ahead and start promptly at 8:30. Go through lunch. We'll have one or two breaks. We'll have a great lunch, and then we'll have the afternoon program. We'll have a panel discussion where you can ask any question you want, and we hope you'll come. We hope you'll bring your family. We hope you'll bring your friends, and we'd like to get a great turnout there at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 29th of November, 2 days after Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Paul David Collins, and we're talking about his book, The Hidden Face of Terrorism. Is that not, how much is the book?
I believe that it runs about $11.50 on the First Books website and $14.50 through Amazon.com and through Barnes and Noble. If I believe that's correct.
All right, fine. So they can get at those two spots if they'd like to, huh?
Yeah, that's correct. They can also get it through First Books, which is the publisher. That's the number one, STBOOKS.com.
Okay, fine. First books, okay. And so let's go on then down the line. And we've been talking about David Shippers. Now, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners about the Al-Qaeda attack, the September 11th attack?
Oh, yes, very much so. The creation of that terrorist crisis, which is the current terrorist crisis that facilitated the transformation of America into a police state, finds its proximate origins not with some madman spouting anti-American hate speech in a Muslim country, but with Zbigniew Brzezinski, President Carter's national security advisor and first director of the Trilateral Commission. Because in his book, it's the 1997 book, The Grand Chessboard, Brzezinski celebrated the transformation of America into a global empire, and basically this empire was supposed to be a stepping stone, the last stage going into a world government.
Isn't it interesting that the logo of the Trilateral Commission is three intertwining sixes, and it's so very, very similar to the logo you'll see on the front of the book of the Luciferian called the Aquarian Conspiracy, and it's fascinating to see the similarity of that logo on really many, many places, all three intertwining sixes. And isn't it interesting, they're all interested in creating a world government and destroying American sovereignty?
Yes, yes. Well, Brzezinski recognized that there was an American aversion toward the external projection of American power. The average American citizen basically just wants to live out their lives. They have no interest in the idea of America being transformed into some kind of modern-day Rome. But the former National Security Advisor's expansionistic geostrategy was antithetical to the principles of Americanism and antithetical to its natal derision towards imperialism. So thus, Brzezinski presented a possible solution to this problem, one that echoes the principles of revolutionary parliamentarianism. And it was on page 211 of his book, he wrote, quote, "Moreover, as America becomes an increasingly multicultural society, it may find it more difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues except in the circumstance of a truly massive and widely perceived direct external threat," unquote.
And, of course, we did have on September 11th a massive presumed external threat. In other words, everybody feels that there's an external threat, so that's why we've got to give up our freedom.
That's correct. Brzezinski began the construction of that direct external threat years before he had even wrote the Grand Chessboard. On July 3rd, 1979, under the prompting of Brzezinski, Carter had signed the first directive for the aid to the opponents of the pro-Soviet government in Kabul. And that very day, Brzezinski wrote Carter a note that candidly admitted that such a course of action would prompt Soviet military intervention. And this all was revealed in an interview with the former National Security Advisor in a French magazine.
In fact, if they reference on that, you can get it from a book called Unholy Wars, written by the correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. We don't carry the book, but it's a very important book, Unholy Wars, where Brzezinski almost brags how he precipitated the Afghan War, and of course that then led to the Al-Qaeda movement, it led to the indoctrination of so many of the Mujahideen, with the idea that they were infallible, that Allah had given them the victory, they could conquer anything in the world. And of course they had adopted this radical form of Islam, which had been dormant for so long, and now, thanks to Brzezinski, why we have this radical Islamic movement beginning to spread across the Islamic world. Good work, Zygdu.
No doubt. That Soviet invasion provided the pretext for arming and radicalizing an indigenous population.
And one of the points you make is that in June or July of the year 2001, just a couple of months before the 9/11 attack, even though Osama bin Laden had already been responsible for killing Americans in Somalia and in Riyadh and the embassy bombings, he was meeting with a CIA agent at the American hospital in Dubai. We're going to talk about that when we get back. But this is a fascinating fact. It's been verified by newspapers all throughout Europe and India, Southeast Asia, but never mentioned in the American press. I wonder why. Thank you. tapes at Genocide, and one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan, and actually Dr. Richard Day was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, not the director himself, but we have actually a four-tape set now with Dr. Dinigan, and we have a complete transcript of at least three of the interviews that were done by Randy Engel, going into the background of this plan, and Dr. Day referred to it as the order, the people who really ran the world, and he was the medical director of Planned Parenthood. He knew them. He was totally in sympathy with their plan to create new diseases, to kill people, and in March of 1969, he was telling how they were going to create new diseases. 3 months later, Dr. MacArthur, we have the testimony before the House Appropriations Committee on Military Affairs. Dr. MacArthur went to the congressman and said, give us $10 million, we can create a new disease, and there'll be no immune response to it, just 3 months after Dr. Day's talk. But Dr. Day's talk, we put it together in a four-tape set called The New Order, the Barbarians, and you get that, of course, along with the transcript. You'll find it fascinating. The New Order of the Barbarians, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we want to mention that we carry the Miracle 2 soap products here at Radio Liberty. That helps to finance what we do. And if you're interested in knowing more about them, go to our website at radioliberty.com or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We cannot, and we're not allowed, to make any medical claims for Miracle 2 soap products, but I will tell you that the people who use them tell us about some amazing, amazing things that have happened. So if you'd like to find out about them, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com, or if you'd like an introductory offer, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Paul David Collins. His book is The Hidden Face of Terrorism, and in your book, of course, you talk about this meeting that is reported. We have the articles out of the India Times and Southeast Asia Times about Osama bin Laden meeting with a CIA agent in Dubai at the American Hospital in Dubai, and I guess it was June or July of the year 2001, just 2 months before the September 11th attack. And the question comes up, why would Osama bin Laden be meeting with the CIA when he was wanted for the bombings of the American embassies in Tanzania and in Kenya? He was wanted for the bombing of the coal. He was wanted for blowing up the Khobar Towers. He was wanted for the bombing in Riyadh. He was wanted for the bombing of the first trade center bombing, because he was associated with that. He was involved with the Black Hawk Down incident in 1993 in Somalia. So what was he doing meeting with a CIA agent? That doesn't make sense, or does it?
Well, it does make sense when you go back in time. Bin Laden headed the Maktab al-Qadamar, or the MAQ, which was nurtured by the Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence Agency.
The ISI, right.
Yeah, the ISI. This organization, in turn, had acted as a conduit through which the CIA could conduct a covert war against the Soviet occupational forces in Afghanistan. And although the interesting thing about this is that although the Afghan war ended in 1989, bin Laden remained on good terms with the CIA. In fact, the very government from which Osama would receive protection and support, the Taliban, was also on the payroll of the ISI.
Now, is there any place you can verify that? I've always suspected it, but I've never been able to verify that there was a continued contact between Osama and the CIA after 1989.
Well, basically in the book with the ISI connection to the Taliban, we know that the Times of India recorded that much of the Taliban's leaders had come from the ISI. The reason that I believe that correspondence continued though between Osama and the CIA in some kind of form was because when he was at this hospital being hospitalized for a kidney infection, he was visited by a Central Intelligence Agency member who supposedly given precise information on an imminent attack in the United States. And also in the Times of India, Manoj Joshi had reported that General Mahmoud Ahmad of the ISI had wired $100,000 to Mohammed Atta, one of the lead hijackers.
Now, this is the man who's in charge of a Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, and that fact is covered in a book we carry called A Crude Politics. Of course, that one fact is worth the entire cost of the book, because the ISI was simply an extension to the CIA, and here's the head of this organization, the ISI, funding money or having money sent to Mohammed Atta, the wicked Mohammed Atta. What's wrong with this picture?
Yes, but most people would try to argue with me and counter me on this point, and other researchers saying, well, India and Pakistan have long been enemies. Of course, they're going to say something horrible about Pakistan. But the truth of the matter is that the FBI confirmed the allegation, and it led to General Mahmoud Ahmad's resignation. Which, if there wasn't something criminal there, then why resign? The problem with this is that the ISI is a surrogate of the American CIA. Pakistan was used as a base for the CIA to launch covert ops into the Balkans, the Caucasus, Central Asia, and the ISI's head is a U.S.-approved appointee.
And, of course, we backed the Muslims, al-Qaeda Muslims in Bosnia. We backed Osama bin Laden's forces in Albania and Montenegro. We backed the radical Islamic movement right up in the year 2000 when those wars were going on. So, and this was after they'd already killed so many Americans. Why would we be backing the people who were responsible for the first World Trade Center bombing, the Black Hawk Down bombing in 1993, the Riyadh in 1995, Khobar Towers in 1996, the slaughter of the people at Luxor in 1997, the bombing in Kenya of our embassy and Tanzania of our embassy in 1998, the bombing of the coal in the year 2000? Why were we consistently backing those people? That just doesn't make sense.
Well,
unless, of course, there's something else going on that the American people aren't being told.
Yes, because what basically they are doing is engineering crises that facilitates the introduction of a government imposed solution that is no solution at all. And the major government induced crisis of our times, unfortunately, is terrorism. One individual who recognized this, and I bring this up in the book, is Father Ignacio Martin Borrow. In his speech, The Psychological Consequences of Political Terror, he described state terrorism as the terrorizing of the whole population through systematic actions carried out by the forces of the state. And this terrorism, according to him, was the integral to the fulfillment of what he called a, quote, government-imposed socio-political project. And now there are some semantic distinctions that have to be made between his statement and my thesis. Mainly, he was specifically speaking about direct application of terror, and he was citing El Salvador. However, his argument can be extended to incorporate the indirect use of force to justify repression, which is the thesis of my book.
Well, what about that getting over onto Robert Baer? You have a section on Robert Baer, who was a CIA agent for, I think, 20, 25 years, and the senior agent in Iraq, or at least in Kurdistan, in 1995. And you quote from his book, See No Evil, which, incidentally, we do carry here through Radio Liberty. And if you're out there, you need to get these books to have the documentation of what we're saying. But where does Robert Baer and his revelations fit into what's going on?
Well, he had given the CIA detailed warnings that had been passed on to him by a military associate of a prince over in the Gulf, basically stating that the Al Qaeda was going to perform a quote unquote quote spectacular terrorist operation. He passed this along to the CIA, and it was never followed up on. And the question is, why would this Central Intelligence Agency do nothing with critical information concerning one of the world's most infamous terrorist organizations, in this case coming from one of their own people, because Baer had worked for the CIA. The interesting thing is that in his book, See No Evil, Robert Baer recounts an instance when a journalist was told by a high-ranking CIA official that in the long run, September 11th would be viewed as a triumph for the intelligence community. And given that the fact that intelligence failed to prevent the September 11th attacks, one is left to ponder what possible triumph this could be. It could be that he's talking about. So the triumph, in all likelihood, is the almost complete rollback that we have seen in intelligence reform that had resulted from the Church and Pike Committee hearings of the 70s. The reforms were stomped out by the U.S. Patriot Act, and the U.S. Patriot Act represents a step forward in the pincer movement strategy. Recall that this is the stage spoken of in Kozak's book, where the conspirators in government introduce their solution to the crisis that they have generated. Hello?
This is Dr. Stan. And in the preface to the book, See No Evil, Robert Baer talks about how one of his friends, who was a reporter, had interviewed one of the chief people, one of the highest people in the Central Intelligence Agency, and was told off the record that when the dust finally cleared after September 11th, the American people would realize that what happened on September 11th was a triumph for American intelligence, not a failure. Let me repeat that. A triumph for American intelligence, not a failure. And as, of course, Paul is saying, how could what happened on September 11th be a triumph? Why, they got us into the war. They got the American people willing to go to war with Afghanistan and to go to war with Iraq, and the next wars are going to be with Lebanon and Syria, and then we can either take out Iran or maybe they'll be toppled, and the same thing with Saudi Arabia, and we'll be the most powerful guy on the block, and we're going to dominate everything and control all of that oil, and we're going the same route that ancient Rome did, war after war, eventually bankrupting the country and disillusioning the people. And eventually, of course, when the Huns came to take Rome, why, nobody was there to defend it. And people find it difficult to believe anything could be that evil. And yet, why is the government covering for Saudi Arabia and trying to prevent anything from being done to find out the part that they played in what happened on September 11th? And why is the government refusing to release any of the information about the presidential briefings from August 6th, 2001 on until the time of the attack? Is it that we don't want Osama bin Laden to know what we knew? Why don't we try all these men that were holding the Islamic people that were arrested within 2 days after the attack? Why don't we arrest them? Why don't we try them and bring out the facts and convict them if they're terrorists and send them to prison forever? Why, we can't have the trials because we don't want Osama bin Laden to know what we knew before the attack. Or is it that they don't want the American people to know what was known before the attack? And that's what it's really all about. If you haven't read the material, Ron Paul's excellent article called Neocons, A Call to Arms, where he talks about how these people in government talk about how wonderful Machiavelli was. And Machiavelli said, lie to the people, deceive the people, go to wars. The prince uses wars. Wars is how you control the populace. And that's what the prince does. He controls the people. And he lies to them and he deceives them. And I believe we have Machiavellian people in government today. I think that they're using gullible people in our government to pursue an agenda, and that is a global agenda that is eventually going to result in the destruction of this country, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And I think what happened in Afghanistan, where we went in to get Osama bin Laden, we never tried to get him. That was all for the American people. You mean to tell me that America, the mightiest nation in the world, with all of our facilities, couldn't track down one little guy living in a cave over there? And the reason we couldn't get him is we didn't try. And we've got articles out of the Washington Times saying that high officials said, we're not trying to try to get Osama bin Laden. Our policy is not to get Osama bin Laden. Because if we got him, why, how would we justify the rest of the war here in Afghanistan? And what we're really going to do is change the regimes in all those countries over there and every country throughout the world that won't go along with our plan for a new world order and a new world religion. What were your thoughts on that statement, Paul?
Well, basically, you've stated quite eloquently what is exactly going on.
Flattery will get you almost anything. Go ahead.
That's all right. These elites don't see terrorism the way that you and I see it. We see it as a criminal action. For the elites, the world is just one big Skinner box. Recall that Skinner's method of operant condition involved negative and positive stimuluses being employed in the formation of human behavior and personality, and the Skinner box was the application of those principles. Well, what we see is the oligarchs using negative stimuluses, which is punishment, and positive stimulus, which is reward, to steer society in a certain direction. And we really saw this elite implementation of Skinner's ideas through the CIA and its employment of operant conditioning all across the world in the form of covert operations. Whether you agree with the man's politics or not, Philip Agee was with the agency 12 years, and he presented some compelling evidence that the CIA was acting merely as an enforcement arm of the elite. And we know that the CIA had an interest in B.F. Skinner's work. The CIA had funded a study group known as the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology, and in turn, this CIA front group had gave a $5,000 grant to B.F. Skinner for the supplies necessary to write his book, Freedom and Dignity.
Now, I think for our listeners, they have to know that Skinner was a scientist who wanted to be able to control other people and develop techniques, mind control techniques, to control them. He was a very evil man, and of course, much of his programming is used in our schools today.
He said, basically, to paraphrase him in his book, Freedom and Dignity, that if we place an emphasis on individual freedom, that would actually bring the collapse of society. So you have to have strict regimentation. You have to move away from individualism to collectivism.
And, of course, they don't want freedom. They want rule by an elite. On page 66, you have a wonderful section here from the Washington Post. Do you want to read that, or you would like me to read it? Talking about how we indoctrinated the children of Afghanistan in these radical Islamic beliefs. And now we wonder why we have children who believe in these radical Islamic beliefs. Do you want me to read it, or do you want to?
Sure, go right ahead and read it.
In the twilight of the Cold War, the United States spent millions of dollars to supply Afghan children with textbooks filled with violent images and militant Islamic teaching, part of covert attempts to spur resistance to the Soviet occupation. The primers, which were filled with talk of jihad and featured drawings of guns, bullets, soldiers, and mines, have served since then as the Afghan school system's core curriculum. Even the Taliban used the American-produced books though the radical movement scratched out human faces and keeping its strict fundamentalist code. And here we are training these children, school children, all about killing and jihad and hating the infidels, that's you and me, and how wonderful it is to die for Allah. And then we wonder why we have children who believe in jihad and want to kill the infidels and want to kill the Americans. Why, we've funded their education, ladies and gentlemen, with these radical textbooks, and they're still being used today. We put in $51 or $52 million to finance it. We're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought, Paul?
Well, basically, Dr. Stan, what people need to start doing is they need to begin information networks and begin to circulate news that is overlooked by the media. And one of those, the outlets for doing so would be through shows like Radio Liberty, and there's just scores of other good ones out there. Because the minute that we begin to eschew excessive consumption of what they're putting out is the minute that we begin to shape our society for ourselves without this privileged few having this influence over our...
God bless you. We're out of time. Thanks very much. We'll get you back again on our other programs. This is a fascinating four tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dunigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to mention we actually hope many of you out there will be interested in setting up an Institute of the Constitution in your community. Institutes of the Constitution are basically 12 lectures, half-hour lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo, who's a constitutional lawyer, to teach people about the Christian heritage and Christian foundations of our form of government. And then there are a couple of tapes by David Barton. There's a syllabus that tells you everything to do. All you have to do is simply go by the numbers, and you can begin to teach your friends and yourself and your family about America's Christian heritage and about our form of government, things that are never taught in the schools today. Why? Because they don't want you to know. If you understood that you are free, you are unique, America is like no other country ever constituted, and those laws are still on the books, and it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court says, the law is the Constitution, not what the people who have been appointed, political hacks, are saying, and that's why we're in trouble today. So if you'd like to get more information on the Institute of the Constitution, call 410-760-9068. And we'd like to see one of these set up in every church, in every community across America. That's 410-760-9068. Because if you don't understand the foundations of America, how can you possibly hope to preserve them? Our plea with you is go to their website, IOTC Online. That's Institute of the Constitution, IOTCOnline.com. Pull down their information, study it, and then make a decision that you're going to be involved in this epic struggle to see if this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. And then call 410-760-9068. Now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when, of course, we want to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family, or at least subscribe to our newsletter to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day. on radio, on television, on radio, on shortwave, on the internet, by satellite. And we are reaching people. We just need to reach an awful lot more of them. And as we have the funds, why, we'll continue expanding what we're doing. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and receive our four best tapes and our monthly newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will give, if you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. We hope that you'll want to go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down our programs. You can listen to them 5 hours a day. You can listen to the archive programs now that we're back up on the internet. And you can read our letters. You can read our monthly letter. You can read the other material on our webpage. Read our Population Control Agenda monograph, which is the best overview of the genocidal policies that are being put in place right now that are influencing you and your family. So again, the website, radioliberty.com, and please tell your friends about it. That's www.radioliberty.com. We do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to coming to the conference we're going to have. It's going to be on the 29th of November. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be from 8:30 in the morning, although the doors will open about 7:45, but it'll start at 8:30 in the morning and I'll go through to 5 o'clock. There's going to be a luncheon. We need to know that you're coming. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please tell others about the meeting. Tell your friends about the meeting. We'd like to get a good turnout. And it's important that you're up on the latest information about what's going on in our country. And I think that you'll be fascinated by what's happening in the Christian church today. And you wonder why the Christian church isn't effective. Why these things are happening? Where are our leaders and why aren't they speaking out? And you're going to learn, of course, there's been a conscious effort to tell Christians you don't have to be involved. Everything is in God's hands, and all you have to do is win souls. And if everything is in God's hands, look around you, ladies and gentlemen. Are they telling us the truth or is there another agenda? And I will tell you that David Horwitz, who was a lifelong communist, told my friend Colonel Ron Ray, that was the message they put into our seminaries many years ago. All you have to do is save souls, and there's nothing wrong with saving souls. But, of course, people have to be involved. And the reason America is in the trouble it is now is because the church has failed to speak out on the moral issues of our time and has refused to demand that those Supreme Court judges who were appointed specifically to change the structure of our society be impeached. And that is constitutional, and I believe Christians have a moral responsibility to be involved in this epic struggle that is taking place today. So you'll get so much information about what's going on and the origin of the things that are happening in the church by coming and hearing Dr. Robert Klink's talk. I have heard it several times, and I learn every time I hear Bob speak. So this is the Radio Liberty Conference. It's going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. You need to make reservations ahead of time, so give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival because we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried out on a political and ideological battlefield. And then we ask you to pray for revival because if the American people don't turn back to God, could you give me any good reason why God should protect this country from a terrible, terrible fate? And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.